Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. KU professor David Gust's tweet in the wake of the Navy Yard shootings is still reverberating around the country. Now, one big question is a legal one, and it's just how far can employers like KU go in holding workers accountable for what they say on social media? Gust's tweet focused on the NRA. The blood is on the hands of the NRA, he wrote. Next time, let it be your sons and daughters. Shame on you. More on all this and your reactions to the tweet in just a moment. Later on this hour, Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill joins us from Washington, and she'll give us an update on the pending government shutdown, then the latest installment of 90 Mile View. But first up, the KU professor's tweet heard around the country. Joining us are Michael Selmy. He's a Samuel Tyler Research Professor of Law at George Washington University. He'll talk to us about the legal questions involved here. Mike, nice to have you. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Robert Shibley is Senior Vice President at the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, a group known as FIRE in Philadelphia, and he supports Guth. The mission of FIRE is to defend individual rights at America's colleges and universities. Robert, nice to have you, too. Good morning.
Thanks for having me.
We're taking our listeners' comments, too. Should KU fire Professor Guth over his tweet, or did placing him on indefinite administrative leave resolve this situation? Our number here, 816-235-2888. Our email address, uptodate at kcur.org, or tweet us at kcuruptodate. Robert Shibley, you support Professor Guth. Tell us why. I mean, why shouldn't he be fired, in your view?
Well, right, we support Professor Guth's right to speak his mind on Twitter because even though Professor Guth is a public employee, and I think that is the basis upon which some members of the Kansas legislature have said that they want him censured in some way, or they even won't support KU as long as he's employed there, he retains the right to talk about these issues of public concern. And what's more, professors aren't just your ordinary public employees. They work for a very special kind of public institution, our colleges and universities. And those universities can't function if professors or students are left wondering whether or not something they say, in this case, you know, just a short 140-character tweet or,
right,
you know, something they say to a neighbor or a friend could get them in trouble and thrown off of campus. Or, you know, in this case, Professor Guth isn't even teaching right now. He's on administrative suspension. So that sort of chilling effect that's created when people fear that what they say is going to affect their careers and their livelihoods and, you know, whether that be academic career or their professional career, like with a professor, is really anathema to how a university is supposed to operate.
Again, if our listeners want to chime in here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, uptodate at kcur.org. Professor Mike Selmy, again, law professor at George Washington University. Let's talk about the legal equation here that's involved. You have said that, generally speaking, if public employees are speaking as part of their official duties, their speech is not protected. Do we know in this case, maybe to begin with, Mike, if David Gust's tweet would be considered part of his official duties or not? What do you think?
In terms of the way the law has developed, it does not seem that his speech would be considered part of his official duties. It wasn't related to his teaching or any of the other duties the university would have assigned.
And that should help him then, right?
That category. I'm sorry?
That should help him then going forward in terms of his ability to maintain his job.
That's right. The way the law has developed, if it is part of your official duties, there is no First Amendment protection. So he would make it past that hurdle.
Well, explain that to me. Why would your speech not be protected if it's part of your official duties? What's the thinking behind that?
Well, the law has evolved in this area, and it's actually quite a complicated state currently. There's an old aphorism by Justice Holmes that says that you have a right to your free speech, but you don't have a constitutional right to a government job. And there's always been this balance or tension between the two, that government employees do maintain constitutional rights, but they also have duties that come with being a government employee. And increasingly, the court, the Supreme Court in particular, has been more restrictive on the rights afforded to government employees when they arise from their official duties. And now what they have said in a case from a few years back is that if it is part of your official duties, it's just like an ordinary employment dispute, and you don't have any First Amendment protection. It's a very controversial decision, one that the Supreme Court, it was quite clear in its enunciation on that point.
You know, Mike, going back to what Robert Shibley just told us again, he's with FIRE in Philadelphia. This notion that David Guth is a professor at KU, though, he's not just an ordinary government employee. He's a professor who makes a living on talking and presenting views and challenging students. Is there any sort of special protection set aside for folks who fall into the professorial category here?
When you're talking about professors, two different issues come into play. One is the freedom of speech aspect, although that's not something that's related directly to professors. The other aspect is one of academic freedom, where professors generally do have some quasi-First Amendment protections that are attached to academic freedom so that they can't be penalized for their political views or for things like that the legislature might find offensive in that. And so there's an academic freedom aspect to this case isn't the right term, but to this incident as well.
So that might help Professor Guth then going forward, what you just described to us.
That might. The academic freedom issues are undefined in terms of the law. The courts generally stay out of issues of academic freedom and defer to the university in that. But there are some circumstances when the issue might rise to level of First Amendment. But my sense is that here it would be more of a speech issue under the doctrine that applies to government employees, with the academic freedom playing a more minor role.
Robert Shibley with the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education. You're out in Philadelphia, and I'm wondering, how much attention did this tweet by this KU professor, again, David Guth, how much attention did this receive out your way?
It's getting a fair amount of attention, I think, because it really does dovetail into some of the, the culture war kind of aspects that are going on over, the extent of Second Amendment rights, the extent of, how gun violence affects people. And so, also the tenor of the comment, like you said, sort of wishing that it would happen to, NRA members if it's going to happen again, is certainly something that, is calculated to inflame. That said, Americans have the right to say things in emotional ways. Part of the substance of speech is also the way it's said.
Mm-hmm.
When you say something in a vehement way, it actually has a difference in quality, not just in tone, as you say something that isn't being said in an emotional fashion. So that is part of the protected aspect as well. I also want to point out that with regard to the public employee speech doctrine, that case that Professor Selmy was talking about, Garcetti versus Sabalas, which is the controversial case, actually
right.
does have this footnote that's caused a lot of people at places like FIRE and universities some relief, but also some confusion, where it said Justice who wrote the case said, "We need not, and for that reason, do not decide whether the analysis we conduct today would apply in the same manner to a case involving speech related to scholarship and teaching."
That's interesting.
So you see there, even though they didn't actually make a finding there, they sort of recognized that talking about the rights of public employees to speak still might be a little bit different when it comes to professors, because, again, they do have such a different kind of, they're not a DMV or a fireman or somebody like that. They actually have to speak out as part of their responsibility. That said, I agree with the professor that I don't think this would be speech, made as part of his job. It's speech.
Yeah.
He is a professor, and his job is always to, bring out new ideas and, make those, make his opinions known. But it's not really part of his job. So, again, I don't really think that plays in here.
Well, I guess in fairness to Professor Guth, he has said that his comment was intended to provoke debate, and he's done exactly that. And maybe getting to your point again, Robert, about just how this tweet was worded, how it was said, again, the blood is on the hands of the NRA, he wrote. Next time, let it be your sons and daughters. Shame on you. The word your was all caps, so he was clearly being provocative at a minimum in saying what he said, Robert.
Right, but the important thing to remember is he wasn't actually threatening to do it himself, and that does matter a lot.
Okay.
You know, this wasn't a defamatory thing. It was a expression of opinion. If the blood is on your hands, you know, I don't think anybody who's being reasonable would read that as saying that, you know, the president of the NRA or someone came out and actually, you know, committed the shooting. He hasn't indicated that. It wasn't a threat. It wasn't defamation because it's an expression of opinion. So, again, it's protected speech. You know, the First Amendment protects a lot of speech that people find to be very offensive and for important reasons, because it could always be you on the other side of that. You know, all of us have opinions that someone is going to find offensive, and you shouldn't be punished just because you decided to express those opinions on Twitter instead of in conversation with somebody you know.
Again, we're talking about those controversial tweet that KU professor David Guth wrote just a few days ago in the wake of the Navy Yard shootings out in Washington. Lots of phone calls here. Our board is full. If you want to go to option two, you can email us at uptodate@kcur.org, or by all means, tweet us at @kcuruptodate. Mike from Baldwin City. Mike, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Thanks for my call. I feel like this professor had every right to do this. I'm a Democrat. I'm a gun owner. I'm an educated person. I abhor the NRA, and I hate to say it, but their actions have basically begged for smart people to basically make the equation that he made to draw attention to how far out of line they are. And it's no different to me than what William Allen White did when he wrote about the Klan in the early 20s to stop the state from going with the Ku Klux Klan in the 20s. It's drawing attention to people that are way out of bounds.
So
that's basically my comment.
So you're saying, Mike, that the professor did us all a service in a sense?
I mean, it bothers me when the NRA goes and protests for gun rights at massacre sites. It makes my head explode.
Yeah.
And basically, somebody needs to remind them that they need to have manners and respect the people that have been wounded or murdered or affected by these circumstances, and not have a guilty conscience and go out and protest at these things, because they know what's at the real root of it, guns. And I say this as a gun owner that's been a gun owner for 35 years.
Mike, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Let's go to Chris from Shawnee. Chris, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Hi, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call. Just a quick comment and then maybe a question. You kind of started right off the out of the chute with my point about the academic freedoms, and also, is there anything, any legal issues here, because he is a state employee. I'm a United States Marine, a lieutenant colonel, and I can tell you there's a huge difference of what I can say and what I can't say in open forums on an issue like this. I'm all for academic freedoms. I attended the University of Kansas and graduated from there, and we need those institutions where people sit around and debate and talk about, you know, heated subjects. The issue I see is that it wasn't in a classroom. He put it on mass media and blasted it out to the world. And where do we draw the line on that? He's a state employee. I'm a federal employee. I can't say those sorts of things in the United States military.
So do you think he should lose his job, Chris, over based on what he said? Based on what he wrote?
I mean, I think it's going to be settled in a court, and I think you probably have the duty expert there on the phone. My personal opinion is, yes, I think he crossed the line. Just because you have freedom of speech, and I fight and defend for freedom of speech, but there are some things that you just don't say in certain forums, and you say in other forums. And my issue is, when you blast it on social media out to the world, and he wants a reaction, and he got one, but there are consequences for certain actions.
Okay, Chris, I appreciate the call. Let's go to Michael Selmy again from George Washington University. You know, our last caller here, Mike, was saying he's a member of the military. You know, how are members of the military affected? How are they, their First Amendment rights affected because of their occupations, Mike?
Well, the military often has different rules that apply to them and different codes, but the principle is the same, and I think the caller actually highlighted the law as it currently exists, and that is that there is a point at which the speech goes over the line from a public employee and becomes unprotected. It's not a clear line when that occurs, and it's a balancing of interests between the political importance or the nature of the speech, and this would certainly be considered political speech, and then the harm that that speech can bring into the workplace or elsewhere. And it does seem that that would be an issue that could be resolved in any number of ways in terms of what harm could have resolved
resulted from this comment. But there is clearly a point at which someone's speech goes too far, and I do think government employees, while they do maintain First Amendment rights, also have certain duties that come with that. And the military and police officers and the like is probably a higher duty, given the nature of their work, that it's easier for speech to undermine their duties. But a professor's not too far down from that. Controversial speech needs to be protected. Different views need to be able to be asserted. But there is a point at which someone... speech may go too far. Whether that was the case here, it's much harder to say.
So it sounds like this is a squishy area of the law, Mike. Each case is sort of different unto itself, right?
It is. They tend to be very fact-specific. There was a case from the late 1980s that has actually close parallels in that it was a constable in Houston, Texas, where it was after assassination attempt on President Reagan, and she said in her workplace, you know, I hope if next time, if they go after him, I hope they get him. And that case actually went up to the Supreme Court as to a determination of whether that was protected speech. They ultimately held it was protected speech because of its political nature, and there were various aspects of it, but also because of her duties. I think if she had been an actual police officer, she was not. She was a lower-level sort of administrative person in the police department. But had she been a police officer, I think it easily could have gone the other way, and that would have been found not to be protected. And the law has also moved to be less protective of government employee speech since that case.
Again, we're talking this morning about that tweet a couple weeks back from that KU professor David Guth in the wake of the Navy Yard shootings. The blood is on the hands of the NRA. Next time, let it be your sons and daughters. It's that last line that's gotten a lot of people riled up. Our phone number here again, 816-235-2888. Coming up a little bit later this hour, Missouri Senator Claire McCaskill. Let's go to Pam from Kansas City, Missouri. Pam, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm interested in whether this is more of an issue of contract law, because as a teacher myself, you know, I have, and I would assume he would also have a contract that spells out, you know, what behavior is acceptable for a professor or for a teacher and what isn't. I know that we have moral turpitude clauses in, you know, in our contracts that make it clear that if we post, you know, that if we post pictures that are inappropriate, or if we make comments that are inappropriate regarding children or of any sexual nature, then we're liable to be reprimanded or disciplined because of moral turpitude. I would expect that that in this day and age, the contracts would also address what you can and can't post on public media, like Twitter. In the absence of that, I think that this is in the absence of anything in this contract that would be specific, I think that then this comes down to an issue of First Amendment rights versus Second Amendment rights. And that the issue of whether one is more important than the other, and or if one takes precedent over the other. So
let me do this, Pam. Let me get Mike Selmy to weigh in here a little bit. Again, he's our law professor here from George Washington U. Pam raises an interesting point, Mike, this idea of whether social media is accounted for in the contracts that academics sign these days and, for that matter, you know, elementary, high school teachers sign. What about that part of this?
Well, for public employees, the contract could not be more restrictive than the Constitution if the speech were constitutionally protected, but in violation of his contractual rights, the contract would be in violation of the Constitution as well. The contract can give him notice, and in a close case, it could play a role there, but it shouldn't be an overriding consideration. The constitutional protection should govern.
All right. Let me grab another phone call here. Pam, thank you for your call. Let's go to Elizabeth from Lenexa. Elizabeth, good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, what example is the United States setting for the third world countries? I mean, where is the freedom of speech here? This guy made his speech based on what is going on. Why should he be set on administrative leave indefinitely? Is it because he said something against the NRA? I mean, I've had a lot of people say something against President Obama, and nobody ever sent them on administrative leave.
Elizabeth, I think you make a great point there. Let me go to Robert Shibley with that. I think she's speaking right down your pike, Robert. What example is the U.S. setting if in fact, it sort of cracks down on what Professor Guth had to say here?
Well, we're setting a terrible example, and the caller made a very good point there, is that if we expect free speech to be defended, we need to be prepared to defend the speech of people who we might not agree with and speech that we might find personally offensive. You know, I do that. And people at FIRE do that every day. You know, certainly we don't agree with all the speech that we defend. That'd be impossible. We defend speech coming from all over the spectrum. And I think we need to step back a little bit and have a perspective and not let the emotional content of the speech dictate how we feel about it. Mm-hmm. You know, we had a caller suggest that he should lose his job for sending out a tweet. You know, it concerns me that so many people now are willing to say that somebody should be denied a career because of 140 characters of what they said. I think that's very disturbing to think that that's now become something that people are willing to countenance. You know, I think we've all said, and I think if people are honest with themselves, we've all said things that we regret saying. And now just because it's on social media and it's, you know, certainly in this case, it's sort of out there for life thanks to Google and Yahoo and search engines like that. You know, these conversations that, you know, certainly these aren't sentiments that are unique. A lot of people are very upset with gun owners and the NRA for things like these mass shootings. We saw a lot of that after Newtown. There's been a lot of debate. This isn't some kind of, you know, strange thing that no one's ever heard before. This is an American expressing his opinion after a very emotional time. And to suggest that he's not qualified to continue in his job simply because of that, I think says a lot of very disturbing things about how we're willing to impose sort of our collective moral outrage on people in a way that really you know, hurts it alive.
And Robert, but given that, let me just read you what State Senator Greg Smith, a Republican from Overland Park, said about all this. And I should point out that we tried to get Senator Smith and some of the other lawmakers who have called for his dismissal on the line today. They weren't available. We also tried to get Professor David Guth with us today, and he also could not join us. But Greg Smith has been very critical of what Guth had to say, and here's what he said. He called the post not excusable and said it shows that Professor Guth is not against violence, but sees it as a means to an end as long as it supports his view. As a public educator in the Kansas high school education system, I'm often consulted by my students as to which college they should attend. As long as Professor Guth remains employed by the University of Kansas, I will no longer recommend the university as an institution worthy of attendance by any of my students, nor as a state senator will I support any budget proposals or recommendations for the University of Kansas. Pretty strong talk there, Robert.
It is strong talk, and unfortunately, you know, while it is understandable that people are upset about this, you know, legislators are entitled to be upset about this. But at the same time, funding of a higher education shouldn't depend on what people who are employed by that higher education institution, these professors who we pay to have independent thoughts, who we pay to have academic freedom, to what they say. Legislators have a responsibility, a moral responsibility, to defend academic freedom and free speech and a climate on campus where people can say different various things that might be upsetting. I can't tell you how many times as a 19-year-old college student I was exposed to ideas and situations that I found a little upsetting or offensive. That's, you know, sort of the nature of living in a free society, and it's certainly the nature of being at a university. And if we want to have universities that are marketplaces of ideas where people can select and figure out what they believe, we have to all work together to make sure we defend those rights.
Couple of comments that we've reached us on Facebook here. Ellen writes us at UpToDate at KCUR.org via email. It seems that freedom of speech is okay as long as it doesn't ruffle anyone's feathers, she writes. The KU professor has the right, as we all do, to speak his mind. If the Kansas legislature removes support from KU because of this, it's strictly political and completely ridiculous. I continue to be embarrassed to tell anyone I live in Kansas. Sherry posted this on KCUR's Facebook page. His statement does nothing to undermine his credibility as a professor. If he was defending journalists who made up parts of stories, then sure, he'd be teaching students contrary to the ethical code of his profession. If he was soliciting inappropriate for any professor contact with students, again, fine. I see nothing here to justify censure or removal of him or consequences to his institution. Michael, I was going to ask you, is there anything unusual, particularly about this case, as you look at, you know, this case sort of amidst all the other cases that come down the pike along these lines, Mike?
You know, one of the things that makes it not unusual is the fact that it occurred on Twitter. These sorts of issues are coming up frequently in the workplace, sometimes with private employees, sometimes with public on Twitter, Facebook, and the like. And one of the things that is fairly clear is that's irrelevant to the constitutional analysis. Publishing something on Twitter or Facebook, even if we think of it as somehow as private, is not private, it's public. And one of the problems with Twitter is that it allows these, you know, very quick people tweet without really thinking about it. And to me, there's no question that his statement was irresponsible, his tweet. And that's one of the things that I think people should be mindful of, and they shouldn't be able to just send out a tweet and expect it to be protected. The comment he posted on his blog, which was related, was much, much more tempered and something that would certainly be protected. And I think the other issue that's coming up here is that the effort to block funding and the like from this the legislature, that would clearly be an academic freedom issue, and that's totally inappropriate. And I think focusing on the fact that he was critical of the NRA is also totally inappropriate. And would, the real issue was that he commented about, hopefully it'll be your sons and daughters next. And to me, the problem with that is those are have to be some of his students. You know, some of his students are going to be sons and daughters or members of the NRA, and that, I think, is very problematic for a professor to say. But it's not the fact that he's being critical of the Second Amendment. That should be not part of the equation.
Let me go to Nagar here from Kansas City, Missouri. Nagar, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to – I completely agree with what Robert is saying. The fact that he put that little end at the end that may it be your sons and daughters, makes it a little bit more sensitive. However, it is completely his right to voice his opinion. It is what he does as a professional, voicing his opinion. And also, I'm very glad that it's bringing this attention because I do believe that it's an issue that needs the attention. So, and I truly believe that the reason he did it and the reason he made sure that it was a bold statement was to create this dialogue and to create these debates. And I'm actually very glad that he did do so.
All right. Nagar, thank you for the call. Let's go to Matt here from Baldwin City. Matt, good morning.
Hey, hi. I was wondering if anybody had raised the point that what the gentleman put in his tweet was certainly in poor taste, but it was really not out of character or, you know, with the tenor of what I've heard coming from the other side of the argument. And, I mean, we actually had a candidate running in the second district here a couple of years back who, in a what could be, I guess, called a debate here in Baldwin City, actually used the expression, well, it's going to be time to lock and load. I mean, actually said this, you know, and I thought, I'm wondering, you know, are the sides in this argument kind of in this, you know, ongoing comic book narrative permanent state of adolescence about these issues? And I'm hearing things amped up on both sides that don't sound like people are speaking from a place of reason and rationality.
Yeah. All right, Matt, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you. Sherry posted this comment on KCUR's Facebook page. His statement does nothing to undermine his credibility as a professor. If he was defending journalists who made up parts of stories, then sure, he'd be teaching students contrary to the ethical code of his profession. If he was soliciting inappropriate contact with students, then again, fine. I see nothing here to justify censure or removal of him or consequences to his institution. We also received this email. This is, unfortunately, yet another example of some people overreacting for political purposes in an attempt to squelch another person's right to voice their opinion. In this particular case, while I believe the professor's comments were ridiculous, I would not want to restrict his right to be praised or condemned for speaking such words. Okay, and also have a comment here from Lori. I tend to think that a professor would be skilled at intellectual debate and be capable of providing intelligent comments and thoughts, that a professor is someone capable of higher level thinking and communication. He clearly is not. This is perhaps more troubling than his views on gun laws. We're going to have to leave our conversation right there. I want to thank Michael Selmy again from George Washington University. Mike, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Robert Shibley is Senior Vice President at the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education, also known as FIRE, based in Philadelphia. Robert, thank you for your time as well.
Thanks for having me.